Just the other day, I received a newsletter from a church that had recently lost its minister. So they faced this Sunday, World Communion Sunday, without an ordained minister to officiate for their communion service. Now, this particular church, a congregational church, in their constitution, it was dictated that only an ordained clergy person could officiate at the Lord's table. Now, the source of their dilemma continued to bother me. I was dimly aware that such restrictions appeared in the constitutions of some of our congregational churches, but I never really thought that much about it until then. Now it struck me. What an absurd stipulation. To understand fully and correctly what sacraments are is to understand that they go on all of the time without any ordained minister anywhere around. Without these churchy surroundings of ours and not requiring the tiny cubes of bread or minuscule glasses of wine or grape juice. Yes, without taking anything away from the formal rite of Christian communion, as is going on in Christian churches all around the world today, sacraments happen in hundreds of ways other than this church ritual. They're what's going on in all kinds of indescribable moments and encounters and other experiences, where we discover later that they meant far more than could be explained by the ordinary acts and elements of which they consisted. I read an account of the burial in 1805 of a British admiral, Horatio Nelson. And in this account, he was being buried. He was considered to be one of the greatest of all British admirals. A group of sailors after his funeral, who had long served under him, carried his casket to the tomb. And one observer writing of it said this. He said, "With reverence and with efficiency, they lowered the body of the world's greatest and best-loved admiral into its tomb." But then he continues, "As though they were answering a sharp order from the quarterdeck, they took the British flag, the Union Jack, with which the coffin had been covered, and together they tore it to fragments, each of them taking a piece of it in memory of their beloved admiral. For the remainder of their lives, that fragment of colored cloth would speak of and would represent, would memorialize their affection and admiration and gratitude for being a part of this great man's life." Now, to a detached observer, that was merely a group of men tearing up their nation's flag. And to a first century detached observer in the upper room, it was nothing more than a group of men having wine after dinner and finishing up the bread. Nonetheless, for those who lived those moments, both were sacramental ones. Life is full of sacramental moments for persons who have the vision, who have the sensitivity, the appetite for them. Jesus was a genius when it came to spotting them and calling attention to them. You might remember, for example, his stopping the disciples in their tracks to watch this destitute widow, putting in her tiny, all but worthless coin into the temple box. Jesus said, "Look at that. Look at that. That woman gave more than anyone else." Now again, to a detached observer, what Jesus said was completely inaccurate. Everyone who gave anything had given more. But again, sacraments are not about cold, hard facts. Sacraments are about the depth of meaning. He did something similar out on a mountainside with 4,000 hungry people who had been there out in the field listening to him. And a young boy came forward to offer his little lunch to feed these 4,000 people. His lunch bag contained a few rolls and a couple of small fish. But that day, in that setting, Jesus made those sardines and buns sacramental. Whatever it was he said to the crowd and offered as a prayer of thanksgiving for what that boy had brought, it turned 4,000 separate individuals into a sharing fellowship, a humane community. One more quick biblical example was the lady who, intruding upon a dinner party where Jesus was, broke open a very expensive bottle of perfume and lovingly, even tearfully, poured it over Jesus, much to the aggravation of everyone else present. There was a lot of grumbling about the waste of the saleable perfume, about her lack of manners, and about Jesus having allowed it. But Jesus, meanwhile, saw and pointed to something totally different, telling them that what she'd done was beautiful. It was sacramental. That is, embodying a kind of spirit and truth and grace that went infinitely beyond the cold facts of that incident. The problem, then, is never a shortage of the sacramental in our world. The problem is rather that of people moving through their lives with a cold, sophisticated kind of obliviousness, or a stubborn, impervious shallowness that is so prevalent in our society. Too often these sacramental moments are dodged or suppressed or dumped in favor of small talk and distractions and other buffers that protect us from emotional or spiritual complications. I actually saw this the other day, and you probably have seen it too. I saw a couple who were having a nice meal at a rather nice restaurant, and I noticed after a little while that each of them was wearing their earphones throughout the whole meal, not just for a little while. Now, I saw them communicate only once, but not by removing their earphones and speaking to each other, but one of them wrote a little note on a napkin and handed it to the other, who nodded in response and went back. Now, that's the sacrament of true intimacy, I guess. Now, that sort of thing notwithstanding, though, our human surroundings continue to be alive with the sacramental, begging to be brought to life. And thank God, part of the time, it does happen. There are sacramental hugs. There are sacramental notes and letters and emails. There's the shedding of sacramental tears, sacramental silences, sacramental phone calls, even sacramental casseroles delivered. There's so much sacraments in our midst. Let me share with you one of my favorite stories that might help to illustrate this a little bit. 3 or 4 decades ago, the 4-year-old son of a Midwestern family was born blind. His was a rare eye problem, and the boy's pediatrician referred them to an eye surgeon at Massachusetts General Hospital. He's a man who had developed a surgical procedure that sometimes worked in cases like that of the boy. Now, the procedure and the aftercare were very expensive, but the community in which they lived, their church, and other sources rallied around, and they were able to proceed. Now, as they packed for Boston, the mother's boy winced to see that her young son obviously intended to take his ratty old teddy bear along. The stuffing was leaking from it, and one ear had been torn off by their dog, and the eye was missing, and she tried in vain to get him to leave it behind, promising a brand new stuffed bear in Boston. And the boy wouldn't hear of it, and the bear went along. In fact, he dragged the thing throughout every pre-op experience and all of the testing and all of the preparation, right to the door of the operating room. The teddy bear was actually his first request after that surgery. I mean, his affection for it was truly amusing, but also quite moving to the physicians and the nurses who took care of this young boy. Well, the surgery was successful. And for the first time, this little boy was able to see his parents. He was able to see the outdoors. He was able to see his teddy bear. And the day came for his release from the hospital. And the surgeon came to the boy's room for his discharge. And as soon as he entered the room, the boy walked up to him and held out his beloved teddy bear. And he said, "Here, doctor, this is to pay you for making me see." Well, that physician, he hesitated only for a moment. And then he solemnly, even reverently, accepted that bear. And he held it close. And he thanked the little boy. And he backed out of the room. From the next day, and for many years to follow, on a shelf in a glass case in his hospital office sat that little teddy bear in all of its shabby glory. And there was a little sign under the bear over the physician's name. And the inscription was, "The highest fee I ever received for my services." Now we hear that touching story, and we think that was so extraordinary of that little boy. Yes, it was. But maybe even more so of the sensitivity of that surgeon. With a less sensitive person, one too spiritually dull to recognize a sacrament when he'd landed in the middle of it, that sacrament could have been aborted. "Oh, no, no, son," he might have chuckled, "I'm way too old for teddy bears." And then directed his attention to the boy's parents. It takes a lot of personal grace to recognize that when along the way in our living, suddenly we're receiving something that's sacred, something that's holy, something, as Tanya would say, is awesome. Sense of expectation of the sacramental is a grace that I think most of us have to cultivate intentionally. It requires a carefully developed subjective spiritual side. It also means, though, being able to suspend our sophistication, our super rationality, and that intuition slaughtering thing we like to call common sense. A lot of us have a real difficult time doing that. When in a few moments we participate with Christians all over the world in this which we call communion, what I'm urging you this morning is don't let it be an isolated thing. As we remember how Jesus turned those simple actions in the upper room into something profoundly sacramental. Maybe it can move you and me to go out and awaken or call attention to or bring to life and be restored by sacramental moments. Sacramental moments that you and I can be certain are ready to bless and to deepen our lives. That can happen